Episode 147, BulaNetwork.com. Hey kids, welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell, your host here at BulaNetwork.com. I want to talk with you about, well, let's broaden it. I'm going to talk with you about how everything old becomes new again. Well, no, we're not going to talk about everything, but I'm going to talk about a couple of things, and we'll do it next. Okay, let me begin by telling you that I am a big fan. I'm a big fan of this whole lean startup movement. And this began some years ago. And a guy named Eric Ries is, you know, heavily considered to be, you know, one of the godfathers of the whole movement. And the genesis of it, so far as I understand, and the reading that I have done and the studying that I have done of it, it really spawned from an approach of building software. You know, don't build a piece of software. Don't build a tool. Don't provide some kind of a high-tech solution for a problem that nobody wants. A problem that nobody has, or a problem that nobody wants to solve, or maybe better said, a problem that nobody wants to pay for it to be solved. They might like it to be solved, but if they're not willing to pay for it, kind of hard to produce a business out of it. Let me tell you what I don't like about some of this whole thing. And this is going to sound like sour grapes, and it's going to sound like old fogyism, but I'm going to say it anyway. Everything old suddenly becomes new again. It presupposes that it's this new, completely new approach to business and to marketing. And for some people, I will freely admit, maybe it is. But not for everybody. It's not as though everybody prior to the whole lean startup that you started a business and you just built it and you hoped they would come. You just built it and you were such an idiot and such a moron, and you did absolutely no research and no investigation, and you just threw it together and opened the doors and hoped they showed up. Now, I'm old school enough to know a lot of people who did business, opened businesses, operated business in the pre-internet age. I know it's hard to fathom. And no, they weren't selling horseshoes. They weren't selling mason jars. And they weren't running the general store in Pioneer America. They were operating just restaurants and businesses and shops in a day somewhere between horse and buggy and today. Oh man. I kept thinking before I hit record, okay, how can I do this where it won't come off wrong? And there's just no way. I'm sorry. It just can't be done. I mean, I'm not bright enough to do it. I'll put it that way. So, you know, if you click the stop button, go ahead. I'm not offended in the least, but if you want to hear some perspective, then just hang with me. I love the lean startup mindset. And while there are many things about it that are somewhat revolutionary, the thing that really is revolutionary is the internet, is the technology. There's a reason why in the old days, business plans were so stinking thick. Colossal waste of time? Not really. And I'm going to tell you why. Are they a colossal waste of time today? Well, yes. You may have heard some people lament the fact that in these presidential debates, because we all have access to Google and Bing, we can look up anything that we don't know. So it's kind of that whole Einstein thing. Why carry around in my head something I can look up? And we don't. There's so many things we don't carry in our head anymore because we can look it up. I mean, we've got search engines on our phones. So, and I've heard some people go on and on about how the presidential candidates in these debates, they need to have access to Google and Bing like the rest of us. I mean, why not? It is the way the world works. It's not like the president's got to hold all this stuff in his head, you know, and are we naive enough to believe that they really hold this stuff in their head? No, you can't. You can't. Why do you think they've got staffs of people who've got these sheafs of paper and notebooks under their arm? These are the people who are providing them. And sometimes they don't even do that great of a job. Wikipedia is probably more reliable than some of these people. But back in the day, you produce a reasonably large business plan, certainly by today's standards. I mean, call it 40 pages. I mean, come on, 40 pages in today's world is a business plan that is at least 38 pages too long. And that's right. No beef, no gripe with that. But let me tell you what you may not know. 40 pages of a business plan existed for a number of reasons, none of the least of which was, yes, to prove to somebody that you're trying to borrow money from that you'd done your homework, that you'd done your due diligence. Have you really researched this thing? And even maybe more so than that, have you really thought about this? Have you given this the thought that it deserves? Keep in mind, you couldn't just go type into a search engine and pull up stuff. You had to, you know, you had to burn some tennis shoe leather. You had to hit the pavement. You had to, I tell you what we did, and this may shock many of you. You know, the best research that you could find is, especially if you were in any kind of if you were in a city of 200,000-300,000 people or more, I'm going to tell you where the best research you could find. The newspaper. It may blow your mind, but I'm going to tell you, I have been in the research departments of a number of newspapers that at the time, unparalleled. You know why? Biggest medium for advertising. And pre-internet America, the newspaper, the biggest advertising platform in a market. That's why they had the data. So let's say that we had a restaurant or a retail store. Well, who are these people? Where are these people? What's the demographic like? Zip code analysis. I mean, all kinds of stuff that newspapers kept up with and had research departments. Now, in a big, big city, they might have a big research department. A smaller city, it might be one person. But they had the data because they needed that data in order to persuade business people, you need to run ads with us. And here's why. Here's how many people subscribe. Here's how many people read an average paper. Here are the days that might be best for your business. Here's the market research that newspapers had. And I would presuppose they still have, although you can now get it from multiple sources. But back then you were really limited. You know, you had to go to people that had this kind of demographic information. Well, you can go and find out in this market, how much money is being spent on dining out? You could find out what kind of what kind of foods, what kind of, you know, I mean, is it American food? Is it Chinese food? Is it Mexican food? What, you could get those kinds of breakdowns and you didn't have anywhere else to go to get that stuff. You certainly didn't have enough resources to go do that on your own. The newspaper would provide that information for this compelling reason, to give you that information so that you would run ads with them. So you go do some homework, you visit with the newspaper, and let's say that you wanted to open up a Mexican food restaurant. Now, we're blessed here in Dallas, Texas, with some great Mexican food. If you love Mexican food and you don't have great Mexican food where you live, I'm sorry. You need to come visit Texas. One of the huge benefits of living in the Lone Star State. But let's say that that's, you know, we're looking around and we're thinking, we start with this assumption. We'll call it an assumption. And we start with an assumption that we think it might be a good idea to open up a Mexican food restaurant because we don't see very many of them. Maybe we don't see any of them. Now, it could be there's a reason why we don't see any of them. Maybe we live in an area and nobody wants Mexican food. Hard for me to believe, but it's possible. So we go and we talk to people. We do some homework. We spend some time with the research department or the research guy at the newspaper. We may talk to other media outlets where people do advertising. We might talk to some radio people. We might talk to some TV people. Again, I'm turning the Wayback Machine on. We're in the pre-internet age. We go out and we talk to people. And we may say, hey, we're thinking about opening up a restaurant. Can I ask you a few questions? What are your dining out habits like? What kind of places do you go? What kind of food do you like to eat? Why do you go where you go? How often do you go where you go? When you go, about how much money do you spend each time you go out to eat? If you had to put a number on it, how much money do you spend going out to eat, say, in a given month? We'd ask all those kinds of questions, and then guess what we do? Now we come back to our IBM Selectric typewriter, and we type out this 40-page business plan. So it wasn't this exercise in futility. It was just, it was the way you kind of had to do some homework and research and to prove to a banker, I've done my homework. I've thought about this. Now, yeah, we can talk about the numbers and everybody knew, okay, those are just, you're projecting best case scenario and yada, yada, yada. Those weren't really the important parts of a business plan. No, sure. You know, every guy that's, you know, a bean counter wants to know, well, what kind of potential might there be here? But yeah, I mean, come on. You didn't give a lot of stock to that, but you paid a close attention to who are these people that are going to start this enterprise. Can we really bet on these people? Should we bet on these people? What kind of people are they? How diligent have they been to really research this idea? And that's what it all proved. Okay, here's what set me off on all this. Over the last few weeks, I've been hearing this phrase a lot. Idea extraction. I started out and told you I'm a huge fan of Lean Startup. I'm a big fan of Eric Ries and that whole thing. Idea extraction. Well, I first hear this cat talking about it, and he's got this thing that he's selling, and he's trying to get people to sign up, and his premium thing's about 10K, and I'm like, what? Hello, idea extraction. Pardon me, we used to call that conversation. We used to call that having conversation with people. And he's bragged about, you know, talking to folks and extracting ideas. You know, I grew up hearing the word extraction, and you know how I heard it? You know, in the context that I heard it? Going to the dentist. You might have a bad tooth extracted. You might have your wisdom teeth extracted. was not a pleasant experience. You didn't really want to have your tooth extracted. Now, you might need to, and you might feel better afterwards, but it was not going to be a lot of fun. Yeah, we'll just go to the doctor, go to the dentist rather, and he'll yank our tooth. He's going to extract our wisdom teeth. Idea extraction. I mean, does that just sound pleasant to you? No, it doesn't to me either. And you might be half my age and it might not sound that great to you, or it might sound wonderful and killer and all, it's brand new. Yeah. Here we go. Everything old is new again. And that's cool. I'm sure, you know, we grew up and we heard things for the first time. Let me tell you how I learned idea extraction. No, we didn't call it that. Working on a hi-fi store sales floor, 15 years old, we called it talking to a customer. In walks Bob and his girlfriend, and a 15-year-old me walks up, welcomes them to the store, and we start talking. And usually what we start talking about is music. Why else are you in a stereo store? And for those of you that are too young to understand stereo stores, we used to have these stores where you sold like receivers and turntables and speakers, and people actually invested in stereo equipment so they could play their records. And so it was great. It was wonderful. And no, it's past. It's long, long past. But that's how I got my start. So I meet Bob, and Bob and I start talking about music, and Bob loves the Grateful Dead. Bob's a Grateful Dead fanatic. We start talking and we start talking and we start talking, and I'm asking questions and Bob's answering questions and Bob's asking me questions and I'm answering Bob's question. And guess what we're doing? We're having a conversation. We're not selling. I'm not selling. He's not buying. We're having a good conversation. We're peeling this onion back and we're finding out about each other. And Bob's learning some things about hi-fi equipment. Cause guess what? I work in a hi-fi store. I got access to know all this stuff that Bob doesn't have access to know, but maybe Bob comes in with two or three magazines and he's been reading articles and he's asking me questions about these articles he's read. And I say, well, Bob, let me tell you what I've learned. Yeah, I know that's what that article says, but here's what I think. So I'm giving Bob my opinion, and Bob's giving me his opinion. Next thing you know, we're sitting down, and guess what we're doing? We're listening to music. We're listening to speakers. We're listening to turntables. We're playing around. We're having a big time. Bob figures some things out. I'm there to help Bob figure some things out. We're having conversation. Now, today, you'd call it idea extraction. You'd be stupid for calling it that, but that's what you might would call it. And that's what some cats are out there calling it. And they're selling their wares and they're peddling their stuff, and their high-end stuff is 10 grand. You can be in my little private group and I will teach you idea extraction. Save your money. Don't pay anybody. I'm going to give you some key points here. Let's just stay focused, shall we, on this whole idea extraction thing. One, don't spend any money. Number two, turn your cell phone off, turn off all distractions, and engage people in conversation and be in the moment. We've got a problem in extracting ideas because we're trying to extract ideas. Invite a dentist, can't invite, even if you're suffering horrible pain, for a dentist to say, I need to sell you tooth extraction. Not interested, doc, you know, I'm fine. Who wants that? Nobody wants that. I have not met any person yet who, without very little provocation, won't tell me what their problems are. Shoot, some people, all you got to do is stick your hand out and say, how are you today? 30 minutes later, you're looking at your watch. You're like, my lens, I'm never going to get away from this person. You know, I had no idea that their life was this upside down. Most of us are pretty willing to gripe, whine, complain, tell people about our problems. Well, let me tell you what's going on with me. Let me tell you how bad my life is. So, you know, to me, the whole idea of idea extraction is just seemingly ridiculous. Really? I mean, people, I'm going to have to find somebody who's paid this cat 10 grand and I'm going to have to find out. I mean, what in the, you're kidding me, right? Because you could pick up a phone. I mean, with today's technology, shoot, you don't even have to have face-to-face conversation. You can do it through SurveyMonkey. You can do it through Gravity Forms. You can, I mean, there's all kinds of ways that you can have unintrusive conversations. Now, back in the old days, it was, you know, you have to go out and meet people. That's how I did it. You go talk to people. Oh, forget the phone. Yeah, we had phones. We weren't in the smoke signal age. We had phones, but you know, you don't want to call somebody on the phone. It was just easier to meet people and to talk to people. And sure, you got turned down, but so what? If you talked to 10 people and two of them were willing to talk to you, you knew what you had to do. If you wanted to talk to six people, well, I got to hit up 30 because 8 out of 10 are going to turn me down. So you just got on with it. I do think there is one thing here, by the way, that I need a kind of an aside. We so want this easy button. And here's what I'm supposing. I'm supposing that people will actually pay this guy 10 grand because it's formulaic. He's got the secret. It's the easy button. I was listening. Somebody had been promoting. Now, I'm not going to use names. Somebody had been, I should, but I'm not going to. I don't want the trouble. Somebody had been promoting a webinar, and this was a webinar, you know, it was one of these typical, you know, how to get rich kind of webinars. And you could tell right away. And I went and clicked on it, and I made it, I might've made it 3 minutes. And then I couldn't stand it. I will admit, I turned on the monitors here in the studio. So the audio, I could hear the audio. This is a guy up in front of people, live. And, I just couldn't believe, I could not believe that he's holding forth and people are actually just, they're eating this up. And he was talking about personal finance, and he was talking about, you know, having a budget. He droned on. I had the audio playing here for about 20 minutes, and he droned on and on and on about, do you know where your money's going? Well, you need to know where your money's going. And he went on and on and on about, you know, how you need to find out where your money's going. And I'm thinking, just go ahead and tell them how to find out where their money's going. It's called, you know, writing it down. Something I did, by the way, as a junior high kid, and nobody taught me. I don't know why. I had friends that they never had money, and I always had some money. I'm not saying I had big money, but I always had some money. And I just, for whatever reason, you know, being the anal guy that I am, I don't know. I would just log stuff. Used to be able to, I guess you still can. I haven't seen them in years. Well, I'm sure you can. I don't know why anybody would use them now, but you could go into any five and dime store, now they're Walmarts, and you could buy a little, kind of a little cash ledger that had, you know, a debit and a credit column. I mean, a little two column kind of a ledger. And that's what I used. I carried one of those around all through high school, all through college, through our, you know, the first years of our marriage until computers came around, and then jumped on Quicken. You know, I mean, anybody that's not using Quicken or some kind of personal finance thing, you're out of your mind. You're just out of your mind. So I've always known where the money went. 20 minutes in, just, you know, you really need to know this. And people were acting like it was just the most novel thing they had heard. It's just unbelievable. That's great. That's brilliant. And I was like, you know, I am in the wrong business. No, I'm not, because I couldn't do that. I couldn't in good conscience do that. I'm sorry. I just couldn't. You know, these are just life skills that come on. 15 years old, and I knew Bob's walking in the store. Hey, Bob, what kind of music you listening to these days? Man, Grateful Dead. I love the Grateful Dead. And one thing leads to another, and we're having a conversation. You know what it is? We've got these little 3-inch screens that dominate our life. When you've gone to a restaurant, when's the last time you haven't done this? I guarantee you haven't done this. You have not been able to go to a restaurant, forget other tables, your own table. If there are four or more, forget that. If it's just you and her, or if it's you and him, I guarantee you at some point in the meal, you're not with each other. I guarantee it. Email me if I'm wrong. I mean, we can't even give each other enough attention to put the phone down, turn the phone off, quit checking Facebook, quit playing words with friends, quit, you know, we can't be in the moment. Maybe that's why it's worth 10 grand, because people just don't know how to do it. People don't know how to have a conversation with somebody and actually be in the moment. Make eye contact. Don't be thinking about something else. Certainly don't be doing something. Come on. We can't drive our cars without texting. No, you shouldn't do that. It's insane. Idea extraction. Give me a break. You don't need to spend a dime to have anybody teach you idea extraction. I mean, I wouldn't pay anybody 1 cent simply because that's the phraseology they use. You know, here's what I probably need to start. I need to do a $10,000 mastermind group on bait and switch. That'll be it. It'll be the bait and switch mastermind group. And I'm only going to take, I can't take everybody. I can only take 10 people, but we're going to have a bait and switch mastermind group, 10 grand. I'll make a fast 100 grand. We'll have fun and we'll learn all about how to manipulate people. It'll be great. It'll be wonderful. You'll love me forever. Unbelievable. Hey, man, it's, you know, I'm riffing, but you knew I would. It's what you expect from me, right? Come on. Hey, if you're a first-time listener, I would say I'm sorry, but I'm not. This is kind of how I roll. I am a big believer, by the way. In fact, I just recorded this past weekend. I recorded a thing for Inside the Ella Studio. If you're not on the list, by the way, I would encourage you to do that. Not because I have things to sell, because quite frankly, I do not have things to sell yet. And no, I don't have any plans right now, but you never know. But I did a video that I just released to the people inside the Ella Studio. I do a weekly video and I send it out every Sunday afternoon about 5 o'clock Central Time. And I did one that was, well, they're all heartfelt, but this one maybe more so than ever. I just, you know, we really just need to help each other. We really just need to, we need to teach each other. So Bob comes in the hi-fi store. Bob needs to benefit from the fact that I'm hanging around this gear all day long, every day. I'm studying this stuff because I'm spending my time doing that, and he's not. And he's going to go buy it, but I'm not trying to take unfair advantage. Did you ever see, what was it? Was it, I keep wanting to say Ruthless People, but something tells me that's not right, but Is it Judge Reinhold? I don't know. Come on, Danny DeVito was in the movie. He was a hi-fi salesman in this movie. Famous scene, you know, and this kid comes in, he's got a pregnant wife, you know, and he's talking to him about these big, massive speakers, and, you know, so what if they're big as a Subaru, you know? When you die, we can bury you in them, you know? And then he sees the wife come in, she's pregnant, or the girlfriend, and he's like, here, man, come on, let me show you these smaller ones. These are more what you need. Because he couldn't take advantage of the kid. And hopefully that's how we are. Hopefully we're just folks trying to do the right thing. And we can do the right thing. And yes, we can make money. And yes, we can be profitable. And yes, we can do marketing. But must everything be that way? I know Scott Stranton on marketing says, you know, it just buy my stuff doesn't work. I hate to differ, but he's wrong. Now, no, you can't go around buy my stuff, but people do it all day long, every day, in creative ways, telling us buy their stuff, and you know what? It works. I don't care what he says. It works. It's kind of like politicians. If they lie to you enough, if they tell it to you over and over enough, it works. Well, how do you think Hitler got Nazi Germany going? If you lie to people enough and they believe it, it becomes their reality. Self-promote enough, you will find enough people that you can manipulate. You'll find enough people that you can hose and take advantage of. No, it's not the way to go. It sucks. I wouldn't encourage anybody to do it. I would encourage you to plug your email address in there. There's compelling reasons why. It's about a 1-minute video right below the opt-in box. Just click play. Listen, I'll tell you why you ought to be in there. Subscribe to the podcast, won't you? And if you feel so disposed, leave me a positive review over at iTunes. It'll help other people find us. My name is Randy Cantrell. The website is BulaNetwork.com. This is The Yellow Studio.